Freedom Show, The Wake Up Call, and you're listening to us on WCOM, LP, Chapel Hill, and Carrboro. I'll take you back to a little bit more of Leonard Cohen, because we can use all the democracy we can get.
On a visionary flood of alcohol, from the staggering account of the Sermon on the Mount, which I don't pretend to understand at all. It's coming from the silence on the dock of the bay, from the brave, the bold, the battered heart of Chevrolet. Democracy has come to the USA.
Dick Paddock, co-host for the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom Hour. And right across from me is Lorraine Hoyt, our other co-host. And would you go ahead and take over?
Okay. That's nice. Thank you for that power. I'm just going to take over. Okay. We're glad to be here again. We're here every Wednesday from 5 to 6 o'clock. With the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, multi-issue, and we're going to have a new issue for us today. As far as I can remember, we're going to be talking about the Congo, and we are absolutely delighted to have two guests today, a father and son, and Ardeen Dubow. Is that it? Ardeen,
that's
welcome.
Right.
And then, am I pronouncing your name right?
DeBoer, Ardeen DeBoer.
DeBoer, okay. And his adopted son, Gudai Gada?
Gudi Gada, yes.
Gudi Gada, oh, okay. Gudi, okay. I've been pronouncing it wrong all this time, Gudi Gada.
Yes.
Okay, welcome, Gudi.
Thank you, ma'am.
Yeah, so you two, maybe we'll start with that. You two met many years ago when, Ardeen, you went to the Congo the first time, 30 years ago, I think you said?
Yes, I went to the Congo in 82 with Habitat for Humanity, and I ended up in Godau's village. We were building houses there for the people who didn't have a decent place to live, and the villagers had a house waiting for me, and Goda came with the house. He was chosen to live with me. They said it's not good for a man to live alone. So,
oh.
So Goda was in the house, and we lived together for 3 years.
Okay, so you were a child. How old were you then?
I was around 17 years old, yeah.
Oh, so you were a late adolescent.
Right, right.
And so did you have parents?
Yes, I have my parents and my dad and my mom and a large family. As Africans, they always have a lot of children.
Uh-huh.
So when Dean DeBoer arrived in my village, my grandpa was one of the chief in the village, and he came and introduced me to Dean and says, you need to take care of this Western guy here. I said, sure.
So it's a little more space than at home with all the children, and you were a big boy.
Yes, yes.
And so your grandpa volunteered you to look after this Western guy and help him learn the ropes, huh?
Yes, yes. So ever since then, Adina became our family and truly my father. We have a wonderful time and living in Ikoko Bonginda.
Wow. So you had no idea when you volunteered to go to Africa for Habitat to build some houses that you were going to acquire a son, did you?
No, this was one of the best gifts of my entire life, going halfway around the world and ending up with a son who is the best son a man could have.
Oh, what a wonderful story. We could just end here. That is just beautiful. So did you initially plan to go for 3 years? Was this the Peace Corps? No, it was Habitat.
Habitat, right. I signed up for a two-year tour, but in Africa, things don't move along very quickly. So at the end of 2 years, I was just really getting started. So
just
I
knowing
stayed
your
for
way
another
around.
Year. Yeah. I signed up for a third year.
Okay, so you were the lone Westerner there?
I was the only white man in town.
And he was the rich man in town as well.
If you're white, you're rich in the Congo.
So you had your own little house there that the town let you have because you were there to help them?
Right, it was a house that was on property they called a mission, and it had been a house of a missionary before I arrived, and there had been one Habitat volunteer who had stayed there before I had. So the house was there for guests, the honored guest.
So Habitat, when did they start going to the Congo? That's interesting. So because you went in 82, and there'd already been a previous Habitat person.
Right. Well, Millard Fuller, who was the founder and president of Habitat, actually started building houses in Bandaka, which is the city down the road from Ikoko. And after he started building houses there, he came back and formed Habitat for Humanity. So the Congo project was the earliest project for Habitat for Humanity in the international scene.
Oh, that is interesting. So this is a little bit of Habitat history, and so how many houses did you build? One or two, or?
Well, when I got there, they were in the process of building 10 houses, and we finished those 10 houses and started another 10 houses while I was there.
So altogether, you all did 20 houses in the village. How big a village was that?
The village is approximately about 2 miles long. It's quite a large.
Oh, this is a big village.
Yes, 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 indeed, yeah.
Yeah. So at the end of those 3 years, you decided to bring Gudai back with you then, or did you go back at another time?
Well, he was still in high school, and he had 1 year left. And after living with him for 3 years, I decided that it was going to be difficult to live without him. But I said, you finish your high school one more year, and then I'll send you a letter of invitation to come to the United States and be with us. So that's what I did.
So that's what you did. And did you have a family back here?
No, not a family here. I am a member of Lockridge Community, which is outside of town here, and I had a place there that I came back to.
Okay.
And when Godak came, he helped me build my house there.
Oh, so
our
you had
house,
land.
I'll say.
But, okay.
Yeah, we had a piece of land there, but I was living at the time in a trailer which belonged to my business partner, and then Goda and I built a house together on the land.
So you built it together. That is so wonderful. I imagine it was wonderful, and you're still friends. So because sometimes
and we're still building the house.
Because a lot of relationships of all sorts break up over the building of a house. But you all were experienced house builders by that time.
That's right.
Yeah. You knew what you were doing.
Hopefully.
Hopefully. Was it very different building a house here than I'm sure there were differences, but. Was it easier here or easier in Africa?
No, much easier to build a house in Africa,
Because there's simpler houses?
Yeah.
I was just thinking that, too. So, now, in subsequent years, you've gone back. How many times have you gone back? Just one time? I know you just were there recently.
This was the first time that I had gone back since I had lived there. Gorda had been there before.
You had gone back to visit your family?
Yes, I did. My first time is I went back in 27 years since I left my country. So it was I'm one of the best moments in my life, returning back in the village.
Oh boy! I bet you were the returning hero. So when you got here, I bet you were homesick.
My first couple of years it was pretty rough because I didn't speak much of English,
uh-huh.
And then I went to English as a second language at the Durham Tech,
okay.
And then I was more homesick at the time, but. Start to making friends, then community members in the Lakridge. They were so wonderful. They became more family, and then I got. This is my second home now.
It's a big family. For the listeners who don't know what we're talking about when we refer to Lakridge, Lakridge was one of the first sort of planned. Sort of on the idea now we know about co-housing communities. Lakridge was one of the early ones, at least in these parts. I remember reading about it and being really interested because I was in the process of a divorce, but for various reasons, lack of money being one, and still kids and blah, 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 I never did go and explore it. And sometimes I'm sorry I didn't because I understand it's a really, really good community. So there's a lot of families there. So instead of being like coming to this country where a lot of times people are isolated, you moved in from the community of your village into the community at Lakridge.
That's all right.
Yeah. So you've been back after you were here about 7 years. Did you say you went back for a visit?
27 years.
Oh, 27 years.
Yeah, it was 27
okay. Years. And so then you both went recently, right?
Yes, this summer. Yeah. We went for 6 weeks.
And that, tell us about that project.
Well, we landed in Kinshasa just before Independence Day, 30 June, Trois-Juin, they call it, is Independence Day in the Congo. And we landed there a couple of days before. And I'll let Goda tell what happened in Kinshasa.
Yeah, we arrived in Kinshasa, and we were... second day is that we arrived there, and the Minister of the Environment knew I was coming, so he invited us to his house, and he was having incredible celebrations, and Dean and I, we went there and they have a feast with the Minister of Environment. And then he was able to sign the paperwork to send the delegations with us in the Lactumba, which is we are doing preserving the rainforest in my tribal region. So a few of his cabinet came with us, and we were able to purchase the tickets for airlines. Then we got to airport, and we find out our tickets was not in the right airplanes, and somebody booked a ticket to a wrong airplane. So, and we were able to travel that day, and we have to return back and stay with my brothers for another week or so. We were very, very frustrated by staying in Kinshasa. We wanted to get to the interior, but we got stuck for a while. And
so
eventually,
you went there on a project for the rainforest. That's what you went there. You knew you were doing that.
Yes, yeah. I'm a founder of Go Conscious Earth. Go Conscious Earth in the United States, and which is we are preserving the ancestral land right in DRC. So that's
the Democratic Republic of the Congo.
Yes, yeah.
I'm learning. Okay.
And the purpose of this trip was to sign the documentation, the agreement between the NGOs and the government and the tribe communities. So it was a very, very well done.
Wow. So you needed all of these entities who would have a stake in having something to say about that.
Exactly.
To sign on to preserve the rainforest there.
Yes, yes.
Yes. Oh, and were you able to get it all signed?
Yes. Yes, yeah. We got, we hosted the community event, and each group of sections of tribe members, and we were able to have that documentations signed in front of the government officials, and it was a really, really beautiful work to see that take place.
I was very impressed with a young man named Pedro, who was an engineer who works for the Ministry of Environment in Mbandaka, which is the capital of the Equator region where Lake Tumba is located. And he did a beautiful job of presenting the project to the people of the villages and calling delegates from each village to negotiate. There was a committee for negotiation, and he insisted that there be representatives, first of all, of the landowners, and representatives, two representatives for the Women's Association, two representatives for the young people, and two representatives for the pygmies, so that everyone was to be included in these negotiations, nobody to be left out. And I was impressed to see grassroots democracy at work in the Congo, and really encouraged to see that there were people like Pedro and the two delegates from Kinshasa who are really interested in doing something to help the development for the people in Lake Tumba. I was very encouraged by the whole process.
So before you went, I take it you were doing a lot of the groundwork from back in this country, preparing the way, I guess, writing letters, and so that you didn't just go cold and try to get this going. You'd been working on it before you ever got there, right?
Yes, yeah. To start with, back in 2010, my mom contacted me about, because of the conflict of logging companies, and they started to merge in Lake Tumba. So, and from that moment, and she said, where what we do is a portion of the land owned by my families as well. So I said, Mom, since I have the opportunity to be in the United States, we can do something great to save the land, to put in a conservation easement. That way it will be for a long term, and then it will be giving the hope and for future generation. So, and I walked through that then in 2011, and she was pretty sick, and she passed away in 2012 with the stroke. She had a stroke, and then from that point, I went back home and to follow. Went to the government officials, Minister of Environment, to register the land rights.
Oh, so your mother initiated it.
Exactly.
And so you fulfilled as a legacy to her.
Yes.
Yes, that is beautiful.
Yes, indeed.
So I would imagine you had to consult with lawyers and all kinds of officials to...
Yeah, they wanted the Alongo is a right hand of a minister of environment, is a lawyer, and one of my cousins also, his name is Luleka, is also a lawyer as well. So in a process, we were doing the paperwork, and then it was the lawyers involved, and then the Minister of Environment, he was even behind of the process of the paperwork, because he was, when he was a deputy, he was elected by the people of Equator region. So he was very pleased and to see how this is taking place and to preserve the forest.
Yeah, and I imagine all of this was made even more complicated. We talked a little bit before we came into the station because of so much conflict going on in the region.
Exactly.
It's amazing to me that in, would you call it a war zone, essentially, the conflict zone?
Yeah, it's in the east of DRC, which is the devastated based on the conflict of mining and the precious minerals, which is also most used for our electronic devices, is coming from that region, which is creating a lot of devastations, that the women's getting raped, and the children are forced to become soldiers, and the all kind of story you can imagine come from that region. And but it's the same old. That's one of the I see if I don't preserve it, is a forest. And somebody go there and they find out maybe diamonds in the region, it's going to be the same scenario problems happening in the east of the Congo.
It's like another wave of colonialism, you know, that the Congo originally was the Belgian Congo.
Totally, yes.
And so finally you got your independence, and that's what you were celebrating that time. From Belgium, but you just never really get your independence. As long as there's anything there, there's predators, whether it's corporations or countries, hovering around to exploit and not care about the people, not care about the land.
Exactly. It's the colonial days is such as bad histories and those even today still existing, because the leaders steer on the same mindset of they just greeds and they taking for themselves. But look at the condition of the populations living in DRC. It's a very, very sad situation.
Very sad situation. So I guess when you think about that, it's really heartening that your Department of Environment, that some of the officials would work with you, that they didn't get their money put in their hand to, you know, be corrupt. I mean, people are people, and it's, if you're relatively poor, it's hard to resist those kind of pressures, but that is, like, I guess, a good part of the story, that they wanted to work with you.
Yeah, totally. They realize in a day right now, because the Congo Basin rainforest is the second largest rainforest in the world besides the Amazon. So therefore, is the most resilient to climate change today on Earth. So that forest, if they kept logging it, and there is no life left for to our planet. So it is important they start to realize, and basically the conference took place in New York City. The UN hosted it. That's all about the climate change and the deforestations and the devastates of all the climate is we are facing today here in the United States, or the hurricanes and It's all about the global warming.
So Gudai is just back from the big march in New York City that our major media barely mentioned. Our News and Observer on Monday said, oh, around 1,000 people. And then I put on Amy Goodman on the radio, on this radio station, everybody. She's on at 8 o'clock in the morning on WCOM, and find out, and then I hear it confirmed elsewhere, that there was like 400,000,
exactly,
if not more, yes. And all kinds of wonderful people. But buses were coming in from all over the country.
Yes, yeah, and people coming from all over the world.
So you were there.
Yes,
yeah.
Indeed.
So was it exciting?
It was one of the best moments, I tell the truth. It was a great, great opportunity to be there, to see the community of the world and getting together and raising their voices about what they believe,
mm-hmm.
and some ways to hope for changes in media. We have to act and right now.
Yes.
If we don't do nothing,
We're sunk. And it's not a matter of when it happens. It's already, that's what I think people got to face up to. It's already happening. I mean, I think when they started using the term global warming, in a way it was unfortunate, because then you get a cold winter and people say, oh, it's not really warming. And I think climate change kind of helps people understand it a little better. I think it's beginning to sink in, except for some diehards and especially some corporations spreading misinformation, calling themselves green. What is that? They call greenwashing. They pretend they're green.
That's right. Yeah.
You know, but they really have their agenda to still keep the same old fossil fuels going.
Exactly.
But you were there in the middle of this excited crowd of people. Did you get to hear any of the UN speeches, or you probably were out on the street?
No, I was totally busy, and some of the leaders from DRC was there, but I was able to talk to them on the phone.
Oh, really?
Yes,
okay.
Yeah. But I was interviewed by local TV stations during the marching radio stations as well.
Interviewed you. Were you able to find other people from Africa to march with, like so to have an African contingent?
There were so many people, it was impossible to tell.
You couldn't have found your own brother if you wanted to.
It was so hard. Yeah.
Yeah, when you get to one of those big marches, it's pretty confusing. So, Ardine, you did not go. I understand you're recovering from pneumonia.
Right. Yeah, Congo trip was a hard trip for me. I'm not so young anymore.
Yeah.
And especially the part where we went to the block of forest that's on Lake Tumba, on the south end of Lake Tumba. This is deep in the rainforest. We went to this village called Botwali, and the lake itself is about 50 or 60 miles long. So we took a boat to the southern end of the lake. And then we went up this river as far as we could to this little village called Mpili. And then it was still a two-hour walk through the swamps to get to Botwali. And by the time we got there, we were very tired. And then we had to walk 2 hours back to the boat. And a couple of days later, after the negotiations had been done there, and it was at that time that I started coughing and feeling like this trip was a little harder than what I wanted it to be. And Godai's father, God bless him, he's 80 years old. He went with us as well. And when we got back, Godai's father said, and I agreed, says, we're not going to Botwali again until they build that road. And the people of Botswana are asking for a highway out to the road, and I understand why.
Yes. Well, we're going to take a station break. When Dick holds up his fingers, he's giving a little signal that we're going to need a station break. And then so you can get a chance to get your thoughts together, make sure you get to say some of the things you're sure to want to say. And we'll be back in a few minutes. Dick?
Yes, this is the Wake Up Call, the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom show, being brought to you on the facilities of WCOM, LP, Chapel Hill, and Carrboro, 103.5 on your FM dial, or streamed from your computer from the station's website, which is wcomfm.org. That's wcomfm.org. We are underwritten by Internationalist Bookstore, which is currently at 405 West Franklin Street. But around the end of the month, they're going to be moving to Lloyd Street in Carrboro, right near the Main Street end of the Lloyd Street. And I can almost see it from here where I'm sitting and broadcasting
Great,
from.
Thanks a lot.
We also want to announce from our fellow progressives at the NAACP here in Chapel Hill that the Farm Labor Organizing Committee has invited the members of our local branch and also WILF members to visit and see firsthand the horrendous conditions under which migrant workers struggle to survive. Our NAACP branch has endorsed a resolution to the upcoming state NAACP convention to support FLOC's efforts to stop human rights abuses of migrant tobacco and agricultural workers. So this is going to be held on this coming Saturday, September 27th. We will leave at 10:15 a.m. from in front of the Weaver Street Market on Weaver Street here in Carrboro, and we will be traveling to Dudley, which is near Goldsboro and is the headquarters in North Carolina for FLOC. We will have orientation first, and then we will visit some of the migrant labor camps, and we will be giving witness to the conditions under which the workers live and work, and take testimony against any retaliation against workers who are trying to work collectively to become members of FLOC. If you wish to join the trip or need more information, please contact the labor chair for the branch, Miriam Thompson, at 919-370-4114. Or you can call her at 917-825-0884 for more information. That's all I have.
You mentioned about the Internationalist.
Right.
And did we find out, I think it's the end of this month that they have their move?
Yeah. I haven't checked, but well, that's what they said when we stopped by.
Yeah.
Before.
Maybe we'll try to check up on that. They're our underwriter, and they're going to do it again for another year. We're very delighted. And so we need to find out, because they were going to have a party, Dick. For their new digs, and we don't want to miss a good party. We've been talking about the Internationalists for 5 years now, and we go there sometimes. And let's find out.
Sure.
And maybe we can go, and we were invited.
Yeah.
And I'm sure the community is invited, so you might want to check it out. Check out their
Check out their website.
Their website.
Internationalistbooks.org.
And they'll probably tell you on there more specifically about their move, which should be a real positive move because the difficulty downtown was the parking. It was really hard, and this should be much better parking. We stopped by when they were in the middle of hammering and sawing and getting the new digs ready on Lloyd Street right here in Carrboro. And so we could walk over there from here, which would be kind of nice. Yeah. Okay. And did you give about WILF? Our meetings are the second Saturday of the month.
Yeah, we should do that. Second Saturday of the month. And normally it's held at the Friends Meeting House on Raleigh Road here in Chapel Hill.
And
it's from 10 until noon.
10 until noon, but we're very casual, so if you get there a little late, it's okay, or if you have to leave a little early. We usually have a program and then a business meeting, and everybody's always welcome. We have some new members, and we're always delighted to get some more new members.
And bring your announcements.
Yeah, and bring your announcements, or maybe don't. okay, so I want to get back to our guests. This is a new topic for us, talking about the Congo. WILF is a multi-issue organization. We're one of the oldest peace and justice ongoing groups in the country. I think the Fellowship of Reconciliation was started in 1915, the same year, but they've had a couple of breaks due to various things, but we've been ongoing, and we're going to be having our 100th birthday coming up next year. Jane Addams was one of our founding mothers, and we were started here in 1935 by Charlotte Addams, no relation to Jane, and so we'll be having our 80th birthday about that, so we're very proud of being with WILF, Women's International League for Peace and Freedom. So back to Ardeen and Guda Guda. Okay, yeah. So we talked a little bit, which I just found out today, which I did not realize, that there are two Congos, the Democratic Republic of the Congo and the Republic of the Congo. Is that right?
That's right.
And they're side by side.
Yes.
And so when I would hear either expression, I just thought somebody was just saying it a little differently, like, with Women's International League, sometimes we say WILP, sometimes we say the whole long name. And in the Democratic Republic of the Congo is when there's been the most conflict or fighting going on. Is that part of that because of the richness with the minerals? And is that part of where the people causing so much fighting whenever there's, just like with oil. I mean, if there hadn't been oil in Iraq, I don't think we'd have had that war. I mean, it's really ironically a tragic thing to have riches under your ground, because there's these predators hovering around who then greedily want to get to it, and they don't care who they step on in the process, or whether it's oil or minerals. And I think you said some of the minerals were these rare kind that are used in electronics a lot?
Yes, ma'am. Yeah, the cobalt.
And
coltan, and that's what it's most used for our electronic devices today. And they usually get it from the border between Rwanda and the DRC, and they get to Rwanda. Some of them managing by big Chinese corporations, and they shipped it to making all the cell phone devices, and to the all these companies that makes any devices today. The coltan, that's the only one place they found in the whole world is from in the east of the Democratic Republic of Congo.
Oh, so you want to send condolences to the people who have their wealth in their ground, because they're going to be in trouble. And so when we use all these electronic devices, there's sometimes blood on our hands with it, isn't that so? And I take it that these mines probably do not treat the people well, unless they're an unusual mine. I know I come from a family of coal miners many, many years ago from Canada, and the history with people who work in mines is another history of exploitation and brutality.
Exactly.
Yeah. So with all of that, you were able to forge this wonderful, positive negotiation, tricky negotiation. And is it all signed and all worked out now?
We have the access to almost 1 million acres of the rainforest that's preserved. And we got the first signature signed by government, Minister of Environment, to secure both the concessions. So, and the recent trip we went back, it was community and the tribe people have to sign their rights by required by the Congolese government on the constitution law. Yeah.
Okay, so it's all
based on the constitution
signed,
law.
Sealed, and
yes,
engraved in in your heart. Yes. Mm. Well, congratulations. That is, it's so wonderful in this day and age with all the heartbreak going on all over the world to hear something that's so positive and so hopeful. Yeah.
One of the things that was very fortunate in this case was that the Minister of Environment, who's in the President's cabinet, is a person who comes from Lake Tumba. So he has a personal interest in this area himself. That was a fortunate factor in being able to get him to sign over the 1 million acres to the concession.
Million acres.
Approximately 1 million acres, yes. And there is the hope that in the future there will be additional concessions granted for putting more of the forest under conservation. It's a timely thing because of the issue of global warming and the opportunity to possibly take an inventory of the forest and sell carbon credits to industry here in the U.S. And the Congolese have started this process of selling carbon credits since they have this huge forest, millions and millions of acres. There's an opportunity now for a bit of justice, shall we say, where the industry will help provide some money for the development for the villagers who are on Lake Tumba and other areas in the Congo.
So that is in the future, but that's part of what the hope is will happen.
Right. Well, the contract for the 1 million acres is a 25-year contract. So, hopefully the documentation that has taken place on this trip, the negotiation with the villagers about what sort of development they want, hopefully this documentation, which was sent to the Minister of Environment, will be something that will hold the Congolese government to the terms of this negotiation and follow through with it.
Great. And I wonder if this could be a model. You said that there might be additional acres, so maybe this would be a model as people see that this was able to be worked out with so many different stakeholders. I mean, that's just amazing to get people to agree on anything these days.
Exactly.
Maybe you could come to our Congress and work your magic there.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it just takes my breath away that you were able to do this.
Yeah, it's true. A lot of people asking me, says, how did you accomplish this? And for 2 years, I said, where? Somebody there is watching.
Yes.
Looking for me and to get these things done. So
some you were probably tapping into some deep spiritual force.
Yes, indeed. Yeah.
Well, I was encouraged to see that the young engineer from Bandaka, and speaking with him, I could see that he was determined that this project on Lake Tumba be a model project of development. Very encouraging to see that these people really are interested in helping the people there, helping their own people. And these are Congolese people. These are not foreigners. These are the Congolese people themselves
who
are taking this on, a partnership between the government and Go Conscious Earth and the NGO, which Goda's cousin has in the Congo, which is registered with the government there, and they're the ones who actually hold the concession. So it's a three-way partnership there, along with the people of the villages themselves who are involved in this development and conservation project.
So, Gudai, so you have started this Co-Conscious Earth, did I say that right?
Yes, ma'am.
So tell us about that.
Yeah, the Go Conscious Earth started a little bit over 2 years ago. And right after my mom passed away, going back to DRC and pursuing and getting the ancestral land right, I have that work it through in a way because the first time when I went to her funeral, I cried the whole time because of the devastation of the people living there, the conditions. It was just, I felt like the Congo, Kinshasa, the capital city itself, is like, when I first arrived there, it felt like people living in hell.
Oh.
It was not different than
it had gone down so much when you lived there.
Exactly. Since I left 27 years ago, it's become just our people just living based on survival modes. And, and when I came back, and I realized that now this is it, and I have to do something to prevent the scenarios is happening in the east of the of Congo, or devastate of mining, and then and keep the loggers away from these pressures, the forest left. So I'm very passionate and devoted to whatever it takes, and with the support, and then I'm going to keep it doing for until I die.
Yeah.
So, this is something is I have to bring, and I dreamed even before I left my own tribe, and something it will happen to help out the people and the families that are living in the DRC.
So you've made a soul commitment from your heart and soul to make this your life's work.
Yes, ma'am. Yeah.
To help save the earth.
Yes.
And particularly focus, I guess, on the Congo, where you see such need and such devastation, and what's happened to people from these forces of greed and brutality that can sometimes sweep a land,
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. From now is we got the concessions, and so the important part is now we're getting funds and getting something start on the ground and to benefit the local communities in a region. And therefore, soon we started to promoting this sustainable development for the communities, and we will pursue and getting more land, and hopefully we will go globally and help out start getting more land throughout the world.
So you're hoping to get like some like grants and funds to really do something significant there? Yeah. Is that something you have any training in how to do?
It's more trying to get the people involved and help out in where they're capable to do things. And so we say this in Africa is one finger cannot do all.
No.
It requires many of us, and together we can
together.
Make a difference. So that's what my that proverb of Africans. I love it, that proverb.
I think it's a union idea very, very too. Powerful. You know, in unity there is strength, yeah. and the moral Mondays, Reverend Barber. You know, we've all got to pull together.
Oh,
I mean, I think in many cultures we understand that. No matter how talented or passionate one person is, you need a whole unified unity group to really, and each one has their gift to offer.
Exactly. Yeah, I find out.
So any good fundraisers out there or grant writers?
Yeah. Donors, any donors, anybody can give funds and to keep it going. And it is a wonderful cause, and this is a help our planet and communities all around the world.
Yeah. Well, it's just like with the big New York conference, Brazil, you know, a lot of their indigenous people have been fighting to keep their rights in their land. And I was so disappointed to hear that Brazil at this point wasn't wanting to sign on to, I think it was about something about protecting the rainforest. We'll see what happens, because Brazil has been considered a pretty good country, but they've been in the middle of a lot of development, and a lot of times, and that gets to be devastating for the people. Even though the country's maybe GDP starts looking better, that doesn't mean life is better for its people. As we know in this country, that as our, you know, the stock market, and I watch the evening news, and, you know, it's up over 1,700, and yet the inequality in this country is geometrically getting worse and worse and worse, and we're losing our middle class. Mm. So, the corporations doing well does not mean that the people do well.
Yeah, I realized recently, or maybe not so recently, that in all of the talk of the economy and how the economy is doing, it was clear that I was not in the economy. I was outside of this economy that we're talking about. And I think it's true that so many of the people are really, in a sense, outside of the economy, which the media talks about, or the stock exchange, or whatever that economy is they're talking about.
It's not a people's economy. Ed was just whispering in my ear that you play the flute. Did you bring your flute with you?
I did. I brought one flute with me.
Okay. And I understand you're also a poet.
I am, yes.
And a carpenter?
And a carpenter. Mm-hmm.
And do you play the flute too? Do you?
I played the drums and the balafone, but I did not bring it.
You didn't bring it? We'll just have to have you both back.
And
we'll
give us good melodies.
So will you play us a song? Before we play, what's our time? Is there
8 minutes. Huh? 8 minutes.
8 minutes. Six. Why don't we wait just a few more minutes and sort of wrap up what we're talking about, then we'll go out on some music. Mm. How does that sound?
Yeah. Sounds good.
I'll play us out.
You play us out. Well, I'm so glad you put it. It's a beautiful flute. That is cool. Did you make it?
No, I didn't make the flute. This is a Native American flute made by a person named Odell Borg out in the Southwest.
Because it's wooden. That's when, knowing you were a carpenter, I thought maybe, gosh, you can do everything. But we'll listen to this flute in a few minutes. So before we go, is there any, if people want to find out more information about Co-Conscious Earth, do you have a website?
Yeah, we do have a website. We have, we're on Facebook, like us on Facebook, www.goconsciousearth.org. And we are fiscally sponsored by Tree Foundation, the tax write-off of your donations.
Oh, you have three foundations?
By Tree Foundations, yes, yeah. So if you send the donations through to Tree Foundations, then you get your tax write-off. So.
Okay, so who do they send the money to then?
You can send the money to 1000 Woolbeer Road, Durham, North Carolina, 27705. And all the information are on the website. And you can,
okay, so to get all the information about this on the website, give that again, www.goconsciousearth.org. And co-conscious earth, is that with a little,
hyphen?
A little hyphen between co-conscious, or it's all one word?
It's just on one word.
Yeah. Co-conscious earth.
Go conscious earth.
Go. Oh, go.
Yeah, G-O.
See, I have old ears.
Go so have I.
I like co-conscious stuff.
Go conscious earth.
Go conscious earth. Oh, this is like a very active go conscious earth.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay, .org.
Yes.
Okay, so look this up. This is really, really a wonderful heartening in this crazy world. And, Ardeen, is there anything, do you have anything that you want people to get in touch with you, or that you two are together on that?
Yeah, we're together on it. I'd just like to emphasize that we're looking for volunteers, and we could use some people, good people, on the board of directors for Go Conscious Earth.
Okay.
This is there's an important function to be done there, and good people who are interested can check out the website.
Okay, so maybe you'll be maybe having some fundraisers.
That too.
If when you plan anything, let us know. We'll talk about it on our radio show, or have you come back and tell us about it.
Yes.
So it's go conscious earth. We got that straight. Okay. So now we're going to go. Ardeen's going to play some flute music, and we'll say goodbye. Thank you so much for coming.
Thank you for inviting us.
I just wanted to make a couple of additional announcements. Next week, we'll have Giles Blunden here.
Oh, yes.
Talking about his new project that he kickstarted.
Generosity Farm, I think.
Yes.
And he has a book coming up. And many of you know Giles from another co-housing project, Arcadia and Pacifica. And he's one of the visionaries in our community and who has started many wonderful things, again, with the idea of building community and getting people together. Giles Blunden, come listen to us next week.
Right. And following our show here, you can hear North Carolina Policy Watch with Chris Fitzsimons presenting his weekly news and views.
Okay.
Directly after our show at 6 o'clock.
And now we're going to go to Ardeen and flute music. Listening to that. Flutes are wonderful music for thinking of being in nature, aren't they?
Mother Earth, yes.
Mother Earth, yes. Yes. So maybe next time you come, you bring your drum and we'll play a little drum music along with the flute. This was such a treat having you both here and cheering us up with such a beautiful story of what you've done. And I love being a mother and a grandmother. I love that your mother calls and her just makes me want to cry, you know, that your response is just so wonderful and how quickly you did this.
Exactly. Yes.
You know, that's
yes, indeed.
Amazing.
Yeah,
so,
we bless and we give thanks every time.
Yes, yes. So here we are about to say goodbye.
Yeah, just about half a minute. So we'll say goodbye now and see you again next week.
This has been Wilps Wake Up Call, our radio show. Stay tuned next Wednesday for Giles Blunden.
Right. And if you want to get in touch with Wilp, you can go to our website, triangle.wilpf.org. And I got in, just to be sure, though, wcomfm.org is the website for the radio station.
Yes, we love this radio station, and they also